Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
This is the 75th anniversary of the completion of the Golden Gate Bridge, the iconic suspension bridge that connects the city of San Francisco to Marin County. The 8,981-foot steel bridge with a 4,200-foot main span painted a distinctive dark orange is one of the most photographed bridges in the world. While several engineers worked on the project, the Golden Gate Bridge District has given major credit for the design to senior engineer Charles Alton Ellis.
While some younger bridges have deteriorated and been replaced, it's interesting to explore what it has taken to sustain and update this important bridge over its 75-year life. And here to tell us about that is Eva Bauer, who is chief engineer of the Golden Gate Bridge District. Eva, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's start out with your special perspective as the chief engineer. You're not just chief engineer for the bridge, but for the bridge district. Why do you feel this bridge is so special to people around the world?
I think the birth of the bridge was no like any other bridge. The way everything started is people from six counties here around the Bay Area had to join forces and offer their properties as collateral for a bond issue that financed the construction of the bridge. So from the very start, and first of all, was initiated by engineers and by people who had a very great passion for building this bridge. And I think that whole attitude, that passionate connection to the bridge that was built in and completed in 1937 simply was placed with the concrete and rebars and steel. Somehow it included that very passion and absolute love for the most beautiful bridge in the world. And this is what we all believe in here in the Bay Area.
So when that bridge was constructed, what was the nature of the development? I certainly know San Francisco was well developed, the city of San Francisco, but in Marin County to the north, what was the nature of development there at that point in time?
The development at that time, the development on the other side was, it was probably at its very inception. These were places for people with money who could afford to travel by boat, basically. That was the only means of transportation at this time, to have their vacation houses built. And over time, there was also a need to develop a better mode of transportation to bring lumber from the north. So all of this evolved over time, and also with people who noticed that the value of the real estate just across the Golden Gate Strait with time will increase. And these very people planted in an idea that we should build the bridge that spans the San Francisco across the Golden Gate Strait to the North counties, and especially to the beautiful Marin County.
How do you assess the condition of the bridge today, 75 years after it was built?
We have our problems like any bridges across the country. We have our own problems with financing the needed uptake and upgrade of the bridge. But I have to say that the bridge itself is in a very good condition. About 15 years ago, we conducted study by inserting wedges to open the main cables, and we found that very needed support of the suspension bridge is in a very good shape. We, of course, have to pay great attention to the surface of the main cables, that, and we're working diligently on maintaining it. We have a repainting program going on right now for the main cables. And as you can imagine, there is a constant attention that we have to pay to all the especially steel elements that we have to deal in an extremely harsh environment. And, you know, the environment here around the Bay Area and especially around the Bay can differ so much from place to place. You can drive 5 minutes away and you will be in completely different weather condition. We may have a thick fog sitting and just covering the Golden Gate Bridge completely, so you won't be able to see it. And yet 5 minutes away, there will be beautiful sunny weather. So what it is, our harsh environment just requires us to pay extreme close attention to the steel of the bridge. And we're doing it both two ways. One way, we have our maintenance forces that doing they maintenance repairs constantly around the year. But we also developed projects that that are of a larger scale, rehab jobs, and also the projects that we scope to bring the elements of the bridge up to par with the present knowledge in engineering, and especially the present knowledge about seismic engineering.
So I want to just go back to your description of the inspection of the cable. So as I understand it, the main cables are, they're fully encased and protected from the elements. Isn't that correct?
Yes. The cable itself is composed of thousands of single wires, and then they were compacted together and wrapped with wire wrapping. But what happened, very important thing, in 1930s, there was lead paste was injected in between the wires inside the main cable, and that provided extreme good corrosion protection because of the quality that lead provides for this very purpose.
But to inspect, you've got to open up that casing, and you describe using wedges to observe inside the cable.
Yes, we selected locations along the cable, and the wire wrapping was removed carefully, and then wedges were inspected because you can imagine we had to apply certain force just to get inside in between wires to see what's going on. But the findings were very positive, means in this case positive means that the cables inside are in very good condition.
So do you anticipate doing that on a regular basis, but with long intervals in between?
You see, I do envision that probably within the next decade or even sooner, we will have to repeat this very exercise. I think with like anything in this world, material, it needs maintenance and it needs attention and it needs inspection. And the only way to do the thorough inspection of the cable is to not only see the condition outside, but also check what's going on inside the cables.
You mentioned earlier the bridge being painted. How long does it take to paint the bridge?
Well, there is that saying that we painting from one end to the other end and then in reverse. This is not how it really happens. Because of the environment we're sitting in, the very we have a very peculiar differential of weather and wind along the bridge. So we know which places along the bridge receive much more harsh harsh exposure. So you can imagine there are locations on this bridge that were attended, we need to attend to with repainting maybe every 20 years. And you go there and the paint is in a very good condition. But there are places that we have to pay attention to constantly. And I mean, every 3-4 years, those particular locations have to be repaired.
Have you ever painted the bridge yourself?
I have not had a chance to hold a brush, but I witnessed the operation on a regular basis.
And is the old paint removed, or is it layers on layers? Does it ever become a question of adding weight to the bridge?
Oh, no. There is a very specific procedure how the bridge is painted. And first of all, the old paint has to be blast clean from the surface of the steel. And there is a definition of the cleaning and what it means. And also there is a definition after cleaning, the profile of the surface has to be to this certain specification. So then you have, when you apply the primer has proper can be laid in a proper surface of the steel. That assures that paint will hold to the surface. And then there is, of course, the procedure about the ambient temperature and humidity. And this has to be closely observed because, as you probably know, we no longer can use lead-based paint. And the modern type of paint, after it sets, is fine, but the application is much more difficult and it's more susceptible to the influence of especially humidity. And also the wind can be a factor because it can encourage setting the paint too soon. So all of this takes place and all of this is carefully monitored while we're painting. And of course, you know, we do have this marvelous color that our international orange and the normally we apply the primer, then there is in two coats, and then we apply the top coat of the international orange. And all of this has to be carefully monitored and done strictly according to the specifications.
So for the color is certainly unique, and I think people around the world and many millions of people who've never seen the bridge itself have seen pictures of the bridge in that spectacular color. Is there a single vendor for that color, or can you bid out the work and have competing vendors?
You know, we've been using consistently the same vendor. As you can imagine, we also have the public work contracts that we let for outside contractors to come and do certain modifications on the bridge, and part of their work include painting, and they can bring that very color paint from other vendors. What's been happening is that, you know, we have to we maintain the chip of the color chip. And one of the very interesting things is to match the exact color is a very difficult thing because depending on how the color is prepared at the source, it may not take into consideration the curing conditions here at the bridge. And this may affect the effect that you will see at the very end after paint cures. It may have a slight difference in shade, and it's never observed by you know, outside, by public, but to us it makes huge difference.
You see it every day and you look at it much more closely than the rest of us.
Exactly. So we can observe very easily, you know, it's too light, it's too red, it's too dark, it's too brown. And we've seen all the variations by now.
In a case like that, do you go back and change it or you just modify the paint going forward?
We just modify the paint going forward because, you know, for the purpose of keeping the appearance integrity of the visual integrity, it really doesn't matter. It's not observable by, you know, from even a short distance.
Have there been any major structural changes to the bridge over its 75-year lifetime?
Oh, absolutely. And you probably can recall the famous Tacoma Narrows problem with a bridge without the bottom lateral bracing that was subjected to a huge windstorm. So what happens with our bridge, the original construction, the original design, did not call for the bottom lateral bracing. So immediately after the tragedy with Tacoma Narrows, the bridge district in 1954 installed the lower rattler bracing on the suspension bridge. And then in 1960s, the very comprehensive full-blown inspection from one abutment to another took place, and it was discovered that there was a need for the replacement of the suspender ropes, and those suspender ropes were replaced in 1976. And then over time, the original deck, roadway deck, across the bridge was a concrete slab supported by steel stringers. And this deteriorated over time to a degree that decision was made in early 80s to completely replace the roadway deck, and it was replaced in 1986. This is when this contract was completed. And then, you know, just to give you an idea how the weather can influence the condition of the steel. The inspection also indicated that there is a problem with the western railing on the bridge, while the east side railing was completely fine. So in 1994, we completely replaced the western railing with the exact replica. And then in 1990s, after 1989 Loma Prieta, the bridge district decided to institute a seismic retrofit program to retrofit all the structures of the Golden Gate Bridge. Because, as you know, it's not only the majestic suspension bridge, but we also have to take care of the structures of the approaches. And to the north, on the Marin County side, the bridge, the roadway runs over the North Approach Viaduct and then over the North Anchorage House. And this is North Anchorage House is the environmental shelter for the anchorages of the main cables. And then on the south side, before we reach the south abutment, going from the south, we have the South Approach Viaduct that it's partially standing on the columns that are inside the South Anchorage House. And then we also have two tall and slender hollow concrete pylons. They frame the another steel structure of the Golden Gate Bridge, which is Fort Point Arch. And when you look at the pictures of the bridge, I always think that it gives that very unique touch to see the harmony in which the bridge was architecturally designed, and that element of the arch on the south end is something so very unique.
Yes, it certainly is.
Are you comfortable, or how do you feel about the bridge in terms of its seismic resistance if you were to have a large earthquake, the largest expected earthquake that might occur in that area?
Our program for the seismic retrofit takes into consideration, as the basis of design, is the major credible quake. And, you know, I can go at length what it really means. It's a design earthquake that was composed based on the decades of observations and recordings taken at this site here. Because, in all, we are located almost in the middle between two active seismic faults. San Andreas, to the west of us, is only 7 miles away, and then the Hayward Fault, to the east of us, is only 10 miles away. So, profit of the RAST approach structure, which is the North Anchorage House. Our south approach structures were retrofitted. We completed that job in 2007. The north approach viaduct was completed. Its retrofit was completed in 2001. These were the most vulnerable places along the bridge. So we feel pretty confident that, you know, we can sustain seismic of magnitude, I would say up to 6 on Richter scale, we probably fine. We don't expect any major problems, but anything above that, we have to make sure that the last element, which is the biggest element, the main suspension bridge, is retrofitted, and we working very diligently on preparing a set of plans for construction of the seismic retrofit. But I think not long time ago, just to give you an example, we have a near-field seismic event, and we have recordings across the bridge that those recordings register the ground shaking of magnitude of 0.5 G. There was no sign of any problem across the bridge, because we also have a program of immediately inspecting after an event like this, and like nothing happened.
So do you still do that? Is that still a policy that if you have an earthquake above a certain magnitude, you will start an inspection?
Yes. What happens is, we have in place, we have written procedures for the emergency inspections following any seismic event. And yeah, like you can imagine, depends on the Richter scale that it's registered and on the closeness of the quake. We go to different set of procedures. It can vary from the very low level of driving along the bridge or walking the bridge or going into certain critical locations and take observations. And the highest level, it may involve temporarily closing the bridge for very short duration of time, where we do inspect the critical elements with the assumption that because of high magnitude quake, we cannot allow public to go through without us checking that everything is fine. So it varies, depends on, you know, the magnitude of quake.
I would think that the main suspension span, because it's naturally flexible, might be an advantageous design in the case of an earthquake. Is that a reasonable perspective on this?
Absolutely. I think if I may recommend, if someone wants to build a bridge in a seismic zone, suspension bridge is a magnificent invention. It's truly very flexible, and of course there are elements of a suspension bridge that have to be treated extremely carefully, because, as you can imagine, main towers, anchorages, you don't have redundancy. So those elements have to be designed with high degree, with high safety factors included in calculations. However, we're doing our analysis right now of the as-seen conditions, and to a high degree of magnitude of quakes, the suspension bridge, because of the flexibility of the structure, is the least susceptible. And this is reflected in the order in which we implementing the seismic retrofit. The reason for the order is, of course, the flow of funding. It's money. However, while we found that approaches were vulnerable to under-seismic event of magnitude above 7 on Richter scale, our approaches, before they were retrofitted, they were vulnerable to the point of collapse. So we really had to do it first. We never get any indication from our analysis that this would be the case with the suspension bridge. So, however, you know, anything above 7, we have to treat it really seriously, and we need to pay true attention to even to the suspension bridge.
What about the roadway capacity of the bridge? Is it sufficient to meet today's needs? And if not, what plans do you have?
The capacity of our roadway is, even with the original design, it's more than sufficient. We do not carry heavy truck traffic across this bridge. For the even the most congested traffic condition, we have a very high factor of safety, and we have extra capacity in the roadway.
So is it a policy that the bridge doesn't permit heavy trucks, or is it just the nature of traffic flow?
It is a policy. We do allow passage of certain so-called permit loads that are heavier than just the everyday trucks that are allowed across the bridge. And we allow up to so-called the purple load at certain time, but it has to be permitted and it has to be escorted in advance. And we usually dictate at what point during that time a load like this can pass.
Well, your position and your responsibility are unique in the engineering field. Is there any advice you'd like to offer to young engineers, especially young women in engineering?
I would say what my father told me. Don't ever believe that because you're a woman, there is something you should know. If you like it, you should just go for it and get yourself ready and do it, because this what you will do the best. So if you like to be an engineer, if you have great inclination towards math and physics, and you really love to see things constructed, if you like to see material to be used in a way that at the very end creates a bridge like Golden Gate Bridge, go for it. And you know, I think that was the most influential advice I ever got. Don't be limited to what other people may think you should or shouldn't be doing because either you're a woman or whatever.
But that
There's
sounds
no
like
such limitation anybody should be imposing on anybody.
That's very good advice for everyone, women and men
exactly.
alike. We really appreciate you sharing the story of the bridge with us. I hope that you're enjoying the celebration of the anniversary and that you and the bridge will be with us to celebrate another anniversary. We've certainly enjoyed it from here. And we appreciate your insights into this spectacular piece of infrastructure.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate that you gave me time to talk about this wonderful bridge.
Well, you've given us a lot of good insights. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.